Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 16th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. Dave Dickey and I are both away today at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Our thanks to the WILL staff, especially Tom Rogers and Jay Pierce for filling in while we're off, well, playing. Of course, I'll be with you digitally throughout this broadcast to bring you a series of feature stories. We'll concentrate particularly on the Farm Bill. So settle in and enjoy this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. And don't forget to stay with us right through the bottom of the hour when we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, Sean, a lot of red on the screen today in the commodity area. The December wheat contract in Kansas City, down 10 and a quarter on the close. December on the Chicago Board of Trade, down 12 and three quarters. March down 13 and a half. In the corn pit, prices generally from December down 6 and 3 quarters, March 6 and a half, May 5 and a half, and July was 6 and 3 quarters lower on the close. Soybeans, January down 7 and a quarter, March down 7 and a quarter, May 6 and a half, November 07 down 7 and 3 quarters. Soybean meal down 250 for December, December oil down 6. The feeder cattle up 40, and live cattle December up 140. February contract up 155, and the lean hogs up 110 on the December contract. And on the mercantile, as we mentioned in the settlement report, the January and March feeder cattle contracts closed up the 3 cent per pound or $3 per hundredweight limit. And joining us to take a look at all of this, as advertised, Dan Zwicker. And Dan, how are you this morning? We missed you on the morning report. We miscommunicated somehow, I think. But we thank Paul Cooley for filling in. But we have you this afternoon, Dan Zwicker, from over in Bloomington at AgriVisor Services. How you holding up with this weather, first of all?
Well, it's not too bad. I like central Texas weather better, but it's still in the 70s down there. But
A little blustery here today.
Yeah, but this is not too bad weather here for November. It can get worse from here.
Yeah. What are you looking at with all this these red numbers on the screen today? On the
today was not a good day when you look at it from a technical perspective, anyway. And I think what the market is basically suffering from is a lack of fresh new news, and that's kind of what the market has to have to go on higher. And basically, you know, you look at the November crop report here a week or so ago, it didn't reveal anything new. I mean, the corn crop or the corn number came in lower than what the average trade guess was looking at. The market had already priced in something like 150 to 200 million bushel decline based upon the Infoma number that came out a few days before USDA. So even though USDA's report was generally viewed as friendly, it didn't offer the market any real fresh new news. Since then, we've just kind of seen the market, it tries to go higher, but it just continues to fail to make a higher high. We had a high on D's corn up around 69 here a week or so ago, and we came within 2 cents yesterday and failed and came back. Today we tried to come back. We went up to 65. Again, we failed. And now we're back down here to this 350 area. So the core market basically is telling you it's tired, it's taking a breather, but it's not real strong technical action. I mean, it is indicating some weakness in here, and I think, you know, where we are moving into the holiday seasons here with Thanksgiving starting here next week. So you may even have some people wanting to take long exit longs here prior to that week. Soybeans have been kind of following along the corn market. But today here, if you look at individual contract months, the soybean market now is beginning to trace out somewhat of a sideways to lower type pattern. We're getting lower highs and lower lows with today's push down underneath last week's low. So that market is definitely tiring, looking like it's needing some kind of setback. Fundamentally, beans have been finding strength from way down the road that acres are going to come down, and it's kind of hard, I think, for the market to work those kind of, you know, that far in advance, especially when we've got adequate supplies of old crop beans around here, and the South American crop is off and running to a fairly good start. The wheat market, which has been the darling of the bulls and the leader through the summer here and early fall months, have basically, the wheat market's, you know, got a four-week downtrend in it and making lower lows. So I think that, you know, is telling us that the market at least believes for now that it accomplished its goal of buying additional wheat acres, winter wheat acres. The winter wheat crop is off to a generally good start. Export demand has not been real well in here. You know, the wheat market is tiring and liquidating, and I think that's, you know, kind of spilling over and hanging on corn, because it was easy for corn to kind of go up as long as wheat was going up. But so I think, you know, all in all, the market is tired from a pretty good run. You know, the rally basically started back in mid-August or late August, and now we're kind of running out of new news, and we'll just have to kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the drop in corn is being credited for some of the increases we saw in the feeder cattle, saying that it would ease concerns that the feedlots would be rushing cattle to market to save on feed costs. And we really saw those two contracts, the January and March feeder cattle that we follow, up the limit today.
Well, I think that is more of a reflection probably of a decline in grains, and the feeder cattle market is going to be very sensitive to the direction of corn. So it's going to pretty much corn, if corn has made a fall high of some kind and we're ripe to kind of go into a period of consolidation, some kind of setback into year end, then the feeder cattle market is going to do the opposite. It's going to try to recover some of its losses as we go into the and you would probably see short covering activity to kind of support that. But if the corn market you know, regroups and charges higher, then that cattle market, that feeder cattle market, is going to be under severe pressure. So I think you have to kind of say the corn market is dictating the direction of feeders at this point in time, and it's going to kind of probably go opposite of whatever the corn market is.
Saw crude oil down a bit today. December down 246, January down 207. The Dow right now up 64. 5 points. What about the outside markets? Anything you're looking at?
Well, that's been, I think, dragging on the corn market also, is the energy market here basically is trying to stabilize, but is showing more weakness here in the $60 a barrel range. We're showing weakness in here, and that's taken a little bit of the enthusiasm, I think, out of renewable fuel strength. That is something to watch. If crude oil begins to this $60 level begins to give way, and all of a sudden we're down to 50, and we're then maybe back into the $40 mark, one would have to say that would probably, you know, put a little pressure at least on the renewable fuels industry, because, you know, a lot of reason why the corn market and the bean market got strength earlier this year was because of rising crude oil prices. So, you know, now they're on the back side of that wind. So as oil prices come down and the inflationary pressures begin to cool a little bit here with gold prices having stabilized into more of a sideways type trading range, that kind of acts as kind of an anchor now to maybe the grain complex, at least for now.
Hey, Dan, thanks a lot.
Very well.
That is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, joining us on today's Closing Market Report. Meteorologist Jay Searle says rain ending for Illinois, some clearing in western Illinois, showers continuing for Indiana for the remainder of this afternoon. We'll have cloudy skies with rain continuing for most of the Indiana area, and highs generally in the 40s, a few 50s. In the southern part of Indiana. It's 40 degrees right now in Urbana, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. Of course, we'll have Peter Leavitt with us at the bottom of the hour to take a look at agricultural weather.
Todd Gleason away today at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, but joining you digitally. I recorded it ahead of time. We'll continue today our series of reports on the 2007 Farm Bill debate. It's heating up in Washington and rural America, and as you'll hear, there's a rift developing that could keep the current bill from being extended. It's a rift that starts at the top of the political heap and not particularly at the grassroots. America seems divided on the farm bill. Bob Thompson says those who benefit from the 2002 version of the legislation are quite happy and would just as soon see things continue as they have over the last 5 years.
This has been an extremely popular farm bill with farmers up and down the gravel roads of rural America. They've been very happy with the benefits of this program and as a result have been quite uniform in their commitment to just see it extended.
That's in the farm field. But Bob Thompson says once you move those farmers out of the field and put them behind the desk of a farm organization, well, the view changes.
Now, the leadership of a lot of the farm organizations have recognized that we have a budget deficit staring us in the face. We have WTO trade negotiations going on. We already have had a case against the U.S. cotton program that the United States lost, that our cotton program was ruled to be in violation of the international trade rules that we helped put together in the last round of trade negotiations, the so-called Uruguay round. So we've got a number of forces that are certainly likely to impact that next farm bill coming together. But I think these higher prices of corn, and likely as corn pulls land away from soybeans, higher prices of soybeans certainly has got our Midwestern producers starting to think more broadly that, there might not be much in the 2002 Farm Bill for us if we just extend it. Maybe we ought to look at a different approach.
USDA, the Bush administration, makes no bones about a different approach. Secretary Johans has said his agency will release a legislative blueprint for the 2007 version of the Farm Bill. It seems likely, says Bob Thompson, this new approach will broaden how Farm Bill dollars are dispersed.
That's certainly the direction that the Department of Agriculture is encouraging movement. You listen to Secretary Johans' speeches. He talks about moving towards a farm program that's equitable in terms of the regional impact, that's equitable across commodities. He makes the point regularly that 93% of the benefits of our current farm programs go to the producers of five commodities. that they're that the horticultural industry now exceeds in value of production the total value of production of all the program commodities that are now supported by the government, and it does not get any support. So there's the secretary also talks about predictability of cost of the program. But yes, it does appear that with the way things are shaping up, at least in the Midwest, that there's more and more likelihood that we'll see a change in farm programs from measures that link the benefits to the production of specific commodities into more decoupled payments, maybe benefits for, greater benefits for conservation, revenue insurance, et cetera.
These proposed changes will be challenged, especially from the southern cotton growers, says Thompson. He says cotton producers receive more benefits per farmer and per acre than any other in the nation. So there is a political divide between the North and the South, corn versus cotton. How that divide will play out has yet to be seen, but the next round is due and should end sometime in 2007 with a new farm bill. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, up next, in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says the public has many misconceptions about agriculture.
The public has many misconceptions about the modern food system. Many of those misconceptions have been developed by authors with fine intentions, but a serious lack of understanding. Unfortunately, once a so-called fact is in print, it is often repeated endlessly and used to build other facts. Take, for example, the statement Francis Moore LePay made in Diet for a Small Planet, published in the early 1970s, that it takes 16 pounds of grain to produce a pound of beef. This fact occurs in other books critical of beef production, many textbooks, environmental education curricula, and is used as the basis for other authors to create their own facts. Figures written about how much water or oil it takes to produce beef are based on the 16-to-1 ratio. These facts are then used by authors, animal rights groups, and environmental educators to convince consumers to become vegetarians and feed a starving world. Their favorite phrase, taken from LePay, is that the world can support more vegetarians than meat eaters. Research conducted by the American Farm Bureau Foundation for Agriculture has identified how the author arrived at that figure and why it is wrong. The research shows that the actual figure is 2.6 pounds of grain to produce a pound of beef in the United States. Other misconceptions have been created and fostered by groups with an anti-agriculture or anti-animal agriculture agenda. They would like our food production system to resemble the idyllic, romanticized rural lifestyle of the 19th century. At the same time, people want to spend less for food, have it ready to eat, fresh, year-round, and not involve any chemicals. That is an impossible order to fill, but the public is so disconnected from their food source, they do not realize it would be impossible to produce today's quality and quantity of food by using 19th century methods. Many agriculturalists know of the derogatory claims made against modern agricultural practices are not sound, but they don't know how to respond. Many would like to challenge the misconceptions, but have no time to conduct their own research. To assist in setting the record straight, the American Farm Bureau Foundation for Agriculture has done the research and developed a new program addressing many misconceptions about agriculture. Information developed for this initiative identifies key issues and provides sound, science-based, factual information to help clear up some of the burning misconceptions about agriculture. In all, the kit's 35 issues cover topics from DDT to global food issues, ethanol to environmental issues, and nutrition to animal production. This new Addressing Misconceptions About Agriculture toolkit will help deliver complex information in a format everyone can understand. Information to address the most complex and controversial issues has been honed by repeated testing in front of environmental audiences. To support the counterclaims, the kit also provides comprehensive references and peer-reviewed science. For more information about challenging the misconceptions about agriculture, or for more information about the toolkit, contact your county farm bureau. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And now it's time to take a look at the cash grain market, and joining us is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, located at the Elevator in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, what have you been seeing today on the basis and otherwise?
Well, the basis continues to stay pretty firm here. Just really don't see much cash movement at all out here from the farmer side of things. Just maybe a little bit of positioning to get some a little bit more cash in this year. But other than that, really not much going on from the cash sales side of it right now.
What about processor demand?
Continues to be in there. We've gotten the basis levels on corn right now to the point where we're almost as high as we can go, this close to delivery with the alternative for the buyer to go and, you know, buy the board and just take delivery if they can't get it bought at something at this level or a little bit higher. So I think the key now, looking at from, you know, looking at it from your listener standpoint, is to kind of watch the spreads and see if we start to see these spreads narrow in here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking back, and just to kind of give you an idea, we've seen the basis since September 11th, the day before the report in September there. The basis has improved about 17 cents on corn and about 18 cents on beans. And, of course, our futures have been up, you know, over a dollar on the corn and almost a dollar on the beans. So we had a pretty good move higher, but the basis side of it is what's really been surprising, that it continues to get better with this high of a futures price.
Hmm. So what are you expecting on the open then tomorrow?
Well, I'd expect that we're probably going to see the futures open a little bit lower, just as Dan had said earlier. It's kind of a weak close on the corn and the beans, wheat as well. We've got some of the energy markets and that have been showing some weakness. So I'd expect us to open a little bit weaker, but wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see some buyers come in at some point tomorrow.
All right. And your prices today, then?
$3.36 on the corn and $6.24 on the beans.
Bill, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. That's Bill Mayer at Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Well, coming up in just a couple of moments, we will talk agricultural weather with meteorologist Peter Levitz, and that'll be coming up as the closing market report continues on this Thursday. Rain is ending in western Illinois. In fact, we're already getting some reports of partly to mostly sunny skies in the areas like the Quincy area and Macomb and up toward even the Rockford area. So we'll see the rain ending from west to east as it goes, and tomorrow we'll see patches of clouds and sunshine across the two states. A few showers still possible in northern Indiana, but highs generally from the lower 40s in the north to the mid-50s in the south. We'll expand that out to the rest of the growing area with Pete Levitt coming up in just a few minutes. But first, our report of AM 580 News, and here's Jim Meadows.
Thank you, Jay. And looking at AM 580 News, Illinois lawmakers are getting a raise. The state Senate today rejected a measure that would have kept an automatic raise from taking effect next year. The increase applies to lawmakers, the governor, and other top government officials. Governor Rod Blagojevich has said he will reject the extra money. The raises could top 13% for some people. The money is supposed to make up for three previous cost of living increases that were blocked. A University of Illinois writer has won this year's National Book Award for Fiction. Richard Powers won the award for his latest novel, The Echo Maker, about a man who awakens from a coma after a highway accident, only to find he can no longer recognize his closest relative. Powers is a writer in residence and Swanland Professor of English at the U of I's Urbana-Champaign campus. The Echo Maker is the second of Powers' novels to be nominated for a National Book Award. His 1993 novel, Operation Wandering Soul, was also a finalist. An Illinois State Police investigator lied to Amanda Hamm while interrogating her about the 2003 drowning deaths of her three children in Clinton Lake. That admission came the day during Hamm's murder trial in Decatur. Sergeant Ben Halloran testified that he deliberately misled Hamm by telling her that what happened at Clinton Lake might have been recorded on video. The interview Halloran referred to was when Hamm allegedly admitted that she knew her then-boyfriend planned to drown the children. The discussion took place weeks after the drownings at a Decatur hospital where Hamm was being treated for depression. Nobel Prize-winning economist and longtime University of Chicago professor Milton Friedman died today in San Francisco at the age of 94. In more than a dozen books, a column in Newsweek magazine, and a TV show on PBS, Friedman championed individual freedom in economics and politics. He pioneered a school of thought that became known as the Chicago School of Economics. Friedman advocated an unfettered free market and had his theory adopted in part by the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations. Bloomington-based Country Insurance and Financial Services is pledging to give $1 million to a proposed regional museum in Peoria. The insurer's gift will put the company's name on the Illinois High School Association's wing of the planned Peoria Riverfront Museum. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
And now it's time for the agricultural weather, and Peter Levitt, our meteorologist, joining us today to do just that. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, we have kind of a blustery day going here, although we're seeing some clearing in western Illinois, but what about around the growing areas? What's happening in the Midwest?
Well, I think that's fairly common across all of the western half of the Midwestern states. From about Illinois on westward, we see clearing weather as a storm system over the eastern states, slowly moves offshore, producing most of the rain. Extreme eastern Illinois, still got a few showers in there in Indiana, and then across eastward to the coast. But we're not going to see much rain for this coming week, and we're going to see temperatures fluctuating around normal over the weekend, and then warmer next week, and it looks like a dry week, and Thanksgiving Day looks to be a fine day. Temperatures ranging from the mid-30s in the morning to the mid-50s in the afternoon, and no precipitation.
We have an extended forecast that's just out that's going to give us one of the first, at least halfway reliable, I guess, sneak peeks at what our winter might be like, I understand.
Yes, this is the third Thursday. We get the monthly extended forecast from the National Weather Service, and the 90-day forecast just happens to be December, January, and February, which is meteorological winter. And the forecast for the winter, for the 90-day forecast, is for a high probability of above-normal temperatures over the upper Midwest, centered on the Dakotas and Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, the probability is about as high as I've ever seen, exceeding 60% likelihood of above-normal temperatures there. And there are no areas of the United States forecast to be below normal. There's an enhanced chance of normal in the southeastern states. That's an unusual forecast when they say the chances of the normal category is greater than average. At any rate, it looks mild, and as far as moisture is concerned, we see dry weather for the 90-day period, December, January, and February, over all of the Midwest, especially in the east-central portions of the Midwest, centered on central southern Indiana. And we see wet weather along the southern tier of states from California through Texas to Florida and coastal Carolinas. And this is a classic El Nino-type pattern. In El Nino years, in the winter months, we do see enhanced precipitation across the southern half of the country.
Any big trouble spots before we let you go?
No, we don't see any. A lot of places that needed rain in the northern hemisphere for winter crops got the rain. Even parts of Australia, eastern Australia, got rain, but they didn't see it in southeast Australia, which is a small grain area, so they're in trouble. Brazil has had good rains. They're improving. The Argentine, especially the wheat belt, could use more.
Mm-hmm. Peter, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And that's meteorologist Peter Levitt joining us on today's Closing Market Report. I'm Jay Pierce in for Todd Gleason. Join us again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets and the pre-opening commodity market report. Thank you.